Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the ploidy breeding we're doing in hydrangea macrophylla. I'm Lisa Alexander with the ARS U.S. National Arboretum. So for an introduction, well, I'm going to talk a little bit about diploid and triploid hydrangeas and interploidy breeding, how it's been used and what it is, some of the goals and objectives of this particular experiment. Materials and methods, including pollen tube development, our seed development and germination, and seedling pollen viability and genome size, and then just a quick overview of the potential for interploidy breeding for hydrangea. So in hydrangea, the base chromosome number is 18, so diploids, as you can see on the top, are 2N equals 36. Triploids on the bottom there are 2N equals 3X equals 54. The content of the diploids ranges from about 3.8 to 4.9, and triploids about 6.5 to 7.3. In some of the studies that have done where people do flow cytometry on large groups of hydrangea cultivars, about a third of them are triploid. Now, not any, so the new re-blooming mop head cultivars that have come out in the last few years are all diploid, but any of the cultivars bred before, say, the 1990s, a full third of them are triploid, and it's always been a little mysterious how the origin of these came about, whether they had access to a tetraploid at some point, which seems honestly unlikely given all the attempts to make one tetraploids and how difficult that is. Breeders had plants producing unreduced gametes. That's probably pretty likely. We've produced triploids in my program in the past using that method. Or maybe there were some interploidy crosses at some point in the pedigree. So one of these mysteries, we're not the only people thinking of it, the German and Swiss breeders that bred these recently compiled a pedigree on them. So this is called the Wadensville pedigree. So all of these famous lace caps, Blaumise, Taube, Nachtigall, Leibel, all came out of this one breeding program in Switzerland. And they were all from a cross between a mophead cultivar, Todi, and a wild type lace cap. So and the breeding program started in 1952 with that first cross. It ended in 1987 after they had released 26 lace cap cultivars. These are sometimes called the Teller series, and they're often sold under incorrect names, like Blaumise will be called Teller Blue, Taube can be called Teller Pink. Those are not correct names. But the pedigree was published in 1990, and then recently a group used hydrangea ISSR markers to actually reconstruct that pedigree and trace alleles by descent through the pedigree. What's interesting about this pedigree is that it includes diploid and triploid cultivars scattered throughout it. So this is just kind of to show how inbred all these hydrangeas are. You don't have to look at any of this text. I do want to show you this top one. Is the full sibling family. Eisvogel, Blaumise, and Nachtigall are all full siblings. Those are all triploids that were selected from that cross. This cross right here, these selections that came out, Cardinal, for example, is a triploid, while Papagal is a diploid. So they had diploid and triploid selections from that cross. Now, this was like the 30s and 40s. They hadn't, or actually a little bit later, the 50s, they had no idea that there were different ploidy levels or anything about these. Based on new flow cytometry, these are potential interploidy crosses. So these are crosses where one is triploid and one is diploid based on our newer flow cytometry evidence. So the question is, are these interploidy crosses that are good for producing triploids or ploidy variants, or are these just producing unreduced or a variety of gametes that are, you know, uniting just as sort of unreduced gametes would? So when the breeders selected all of these triploids full siblings, they really were seeing something very different. So we created a full sibling family that had triploids and diploids in it, by unreduced gamete breeding, and you can easily see that the triploids are thicker, bigger, greener, the flowers are bigger, the leaves are thicker, more lustrous, they're a little more resistant to foliar diseases just based on the mechanics of the leaf color and thickness, and also you can see through a microscope that the stomata have a little bit of a different architecture as well on those. So the triploids did change. They had larger and fewer flowers, but interestingly enough, some of the aneuploids also had really interesting morphological changes. We had one aneuploid that produced on average 56 inflorescences per year, while, you know, main hydrangeas will produce 8, 10, you know, at any given time on a large bush. So crossing among ploidy levels may generate new ploidy levels and phenotypic variability. It's been used in, I mean, this is just everything from Arabidopsis, fruit trees, woody ornamentals, floriculture crops. Almost every ornamental will use interploidy breeding at some time. A lot of times it's to make sterile triploids. A lot of times it's just to try to generate new chromosome numbers, new ploidy levels. So my hypothesis was that crossing among big leaf hydrangea ploidy levels may generate offspring of diverse ploidy levels and of diverse phenological traits. So the goals were to evaluate the viability and fertility of these crosses and to possibly generate new breeding lines and cultivars. The specific objectives were to produce a series of F1 full sib families using parents of different ploidy levels, look at the pollen tube growth and development, evaluate seed development, seed germination and growth, and then finally look at the genome size and then the subsequent pollen viability of those seedlings to see if they're sterile or if it is a path that could be continued forward for continued breeding. So we crossed the seeds using the typical method of emasculation, bagging, wait 2 days, pollinate. These were made in 2017. We harvest the capsules when they're ripe in late fall. We sowed up to 100 seeds of each full sib family in 10-20 flats. They will germinate in about 7 days in those flats, and we record germination all the way through a month. You can see on the left the diploid by diploid cross, and on the right the diploid by triploid crosses. There is, I mean, instant differences in germination and in every trait that we looked at. So for pollen tube growth, we harvested 10 flowers of each cross at 24, 48, and 72 hours after pollination, stained with decolorized aniline blue, visualized under a fluorescent microscope. For 6 flowers of each cross, we recorded pollen tube length, whether the pollens had reached the ovaries. We analyzed pollen tube length using analysis of covariance and the number of pollen tubes and ovaries via chi-square. For pollen viability, we looked at 2 flowers per plant and stained them with an acetocarbon basic fusion. For genome size, we chopped just for the parents and the offspring a little bit of their leaf with standard. We used pea, filtered it, stained it with DAPI. We ran it on a cycloploidy analyzer with standard quality metrics with number of particles and CVs. And we take every value is a average of 2 subsamples per plant. So for the parents, we just went ahead and redid their genome size because, right, these are cuttings and cuttings and cuttings, and you just have to confirm. And the 2 parent cultivars, Decatur Blue and Oak Hill, had the standard genome size of about 4.5 picograms, while our 3 triploids range between 6.2 and 6.4. They all had stainable pollen, plenty of stainable pollen to be used for breeding. So you'll see a trend as we go through these pictures. Diploid pollen germinates and grows quickly, no matter what you put it on, and triploid pollen just doesn't. So if you see these are diploid by diploid crosses, high pollen germination rate by 24 hours, lots of pollen tubes had reached the ovaries in all the samples. Certainly by 48 and 72, you can see a lot of pollen tubes in the ovaries. 2x3, there was low pollen germination rate, but still half of the samples did have pollen tubes that reached the ovaries in 24 hours. For triploid by diploid, there was a high pollen germination rate, but very slow growth. So the pollens germinated on the style, but they grow very slowly. You can see in this picture, they only made it to about here, which is not different than a self pollination would do. But by 48 and 72 hours, they did have pollen tubes in the ovaries, although not as many. And the triploid intercrosses had low pollen germination and low growth for pollen tubes reaching the ovaries. However, you can see here that all of them did at least have, you know, one, two, a few, you know, made it for every cross type. So the chi-square showed a significant association between the flowers with pollen tubes reaching the ovaries at 24 and 48 hours. You can see it here in the figure where the triploid crosses anytime they were, the 3x2 and the 3x3 had very slow initial growth, but by 72 hours there was no difference among any cross type for pollen tubes reaching the ovaries. For pollen tube growth, you can see here that flower length was actually the number one factor in how long the pollen tubes are. So that's why we ended up using analysis of covariance, because we held that as a covariate, because triploids always have bigger flowers than diploids. So that has to be held as a covariate because due to the variation that it adds. Even with that, you can see among all these different crosses that even in reciprocal crosses of, you know, even among diploids, there are differences between those. So there were some significant differences. Overall, it's the same trend where, you know, the triploid by triploids are very short until the last day, until the 72-hour period. So for seed set and germination, there were a lot of zeros and ones. For these. However, every cross type, 3x3, 3x2, 2x3, did make some seeds on some of the crosses that we were able to collect. Germination ranged between 0% and about 50%. We put these into 4-inch pots after a month and then into 1.5-gallon pots about 4 months after growth. So these are what they look like about 4 months after their growth. This is sort of what a standard macrophylla would look like there on the left from seed, and then everything else is either significantly dwarfed to the point of death or just very small. So for the genome size results, you can see that we did not recover any triploids from the 3x2 or the 3x3 crosses. In fact, everything tended to trend down towards diploid. So we had a couple of, by just sort of estimating based on genome size, some aneuploids plus one, plus five towards the diploid. We did have a lot of variation. So none of them flowered the first year. Some of them flowered this year. You can see the number of plants we had total in the second column, the number that flowered and the percent that flowered, and the number of sterile plants. So obviously diploid crosses, none of them were sterile. For diploid by triploid, there was only 4 flowering plants and half of those were sterile. For the triploid times diploid, we had 16 plants that flowered, only 2 were sterile, and none of the we only had 2 triploid by triploid plants, and they did not flower. You can see for the ones that did flower, their range was not different than their parents. So they're not less fertile than the parents that made them, which is interesting. Of course, those are for only the ones that are not sterile included in that mean. So sort of in summary, I think that unreduced gamete breeding is going to be better for producing triploids, but this did produce fertile aneuploids that had a wide range of variability that's being looked at for how stable it is in propagation and for sort of their unique ornamental traits. So with that, I would like to thank our technicians, Carrie Witcher, Benjamin Moore, Joseph Davis, and we had a student this summer, Mackenzie Whitlock, that took some of this data, and I'll take a couple of questions. Yes? Okay.
Do the triploids arise from intra? intra-specific or inter-specific crosses generally, or is there no rhyme or reason to it?
Intra, so macrophyllas will really only happily cross with dichroa. They won't make very many interspecific with like arborescens or paniculata. So these are all, we identified macrophylla cultivars that made unreduced gametes and just crossed them with other macrophyllas to get triploid max. Yes?
Is flower length the same as style length?
Flower length the same as style length.
Length,
we measured the entire flower that we could see in the field of view from the pedicel base to the very front, because the pollen tube would simply go all the way down to the bottom of the ovary near the pedicel, and we wanted to capture that length as a covariate. So we made it up. A better term might be appropriate. Yes, thank you for that. Yes.
So like the flowering pot Moppets,
yes.
They almost look like they're
triploid. Many are.
Many are.
Mm-hmm.
So would it benefit them to have aneuploid types? Could you have more floriferous types?
I think it would. They don't have the thickness and maybe greenness of some of the potted plants, especially that the Europeans use as pot plants, but they certainly have the flowering mutations for many, many flowers and probably some potential value as florist flowers and landscape plants. Okay, thank you.